Welcome to Dealcast, the voice of Merger Market, the world's leading publication about mergers and acquisitions. I'm Juliana Needham, a journalist who's been covering M&A for more than a decade. In this episode, we are talking beauty. In a less than beautiful M&A market, advisors looking to sell high-quality beauty assets in the US are increasingly turning to fireside chats over more traditional sale processes. To find out more, I'm joined by Brian New, who is a consumer reporter for Merger Market based in New York. Hi, Brian. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Juliana. It's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Could you begin by giving me the lay of the land for the beauty sector in North America in 2025, please?
Of course. So I said in my last podcast appearance in Feb that, you know, the bar for getting deals done in beauty and wellness was higher than ever before, and that only real high quality assets were attracting a significant amount of interest. I think 7 months later, the story remains relatively the same. There's just not as much demand. We're only seeing A-plus assets. B or C assets aren't getting done. It's only those A-plus assets that are transacting. And it's been relatively quiet overall, I would say, compared to previous years. Now, sources have told me that during the COVID and post-COVID boom, we saw plenty of B and C assets transacting, and then there were lots of buyers for them. But it's a way more competitive market now. There's new brands being born every day. It's hard to really know what's going to survive and thrive. Just looking at merger market data on U.S. beauty M&A, we've only seen 29 deals this year so far in the U.S. In 2020, we saw 68, 101 in 2021, 86 in 2022. So you can see that the numbers just aren't really close to that, you know, COVID and post-COVID boom yet.
And could you expand on that? Why is there a lackluster appetite for doing deals, both from private equity buyers and also strategics? You mentioned the new brands there. How does that play into it?
Sure. It's really a case of going back to what I said, the brands being born every day, but at the same time, strategics are, you know, becoming really disciplined. Sponsors are becoming a lot more choosy. And if they look at brands that can't really differentiate itself, it suddenly becomes, you know, a lot less attractive, a lot less desirable. We've seen the biggest deals this year in beauty, at least. They've been dominated by strategics. There's L'Oreal's pending $1.3 billion acquisition of ColorWow, e.l.f. Beauty's $1 billion acquisition of Hailey Bieber's skincare brand Rhode. We have seen, I would say, sponsor activity pick up in the recent few weeks. But once again, going back to the data, you know, it's obviously a far cry from what we've seen in previous years. And I think the two strategics and sponsors, I think they're intrinsically linked. Strategics look at obviously tons of assets every year that they could look to acquire, but they're really only looking to do one or two deals a year at most these days. And the sponsors, you know, when they see that strategics are backing away, that gets them spooked very easily.
And I guess, like you say, there's lots of new brands. The longevity of a lot of brands must be called into question because it could be the hot new thing 1 minute and then disappear the next.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard sources tell me that, you know, these days they're really looking for brands that are science and dermatology backed instead of those that kind of rely solely on their marketing hype or things of that nature that, you know, might not be consistent long term when they're looking at who they could look to acquire.
Okay, so let's get into the main point of the conversation. Let's talk about this trend of fireside chats or closed processes replacing more traditional auctions and sales. Could you tell me how advisors are targeting their ideal buyers for clients through these quieter processes and why they see it as a better approach in the current market?
Yeah, of course. So I would say that this is a trend that has been sort of born out of this dwindling interest in beauty assets in the past year or so. Fireside chats, like you said, are now being viewed as the equivalent of sending books out or maybe the launch of a formal sale process. And sources have told me it's really rare for beauty assets and especially the sort of high quality ones to send books out anymore. The process is more nuanced these days because there's just a lot less buyers out there. The popular approach now is to do sort of closed fireside chats with specific buyer targets. And only if those don't work out, they'll send books out in a traditional open process. And I'd say part of the reason for this is sort of the increased fear of failure. You know, companies don't want to be asked what's wrong with your brand or be labeled as a failed process if they do a big open process. And they obviously don't want to taint their process with rumors that you're out in the market and no one's biting. You know, what is that signaling to other sort of acquirers that could be there? So sellers instead now can say, we haven't sent books out. We're just having informal conversations. And I would say now it's definitely much more of a buyer's market. You know, no one wants to participate in a highly competitive auction process. And you definitely don't want to go around to a broad audience of sponsors with them knowing that you talked to a bunch of strategics who turned you down. And like I said previously, there's also just a lot less strategic buyers these days. You look at consumer spending trends, you look at beauty strategics, quarterly earnings, and stock price. As long as those remain, you know, depressed from the COVID and post-COVID levels I was talking about, this will continue to be the trend, I think.
And could you give some examples of companies that have pursued this approach?
Yeah, of course. So there was one brand that we wrote about called Amika in late August. This is a hair care and stylist tools brand backed by the Bonce Group. We reported that they were conducting fireside chats with strategics in recent months and that they had appointed Raymond James to oversee the process. They were doing $200 million in revenue, and we wrote that they could see interest from some of the biggest personal care strategics, L'Oreal, P&G, Unilever, very, you know, decently sized companies. So it's an example of one where they're obviously looking at target strategics, and they'll probably do a closed process and might even get one done without having to go and do a formal auction process, sending books out and all of that. Another example, even more recently, was that we reported last week, a founder-owned skincare and body care brand called Osea. We reported they had recently been in touch with potential sponsor bidders. This process is also led by Raymond James. They have around $20 million in EBITDA and $100 million in sales, so decently sized as well. And just 2 days ago, actually, they announced that they had received a strategic growth investment from General Atlantic. So it just goes to show, you know, how quickly these things can kind of come together behind the scenes when there's no formal auction process, really.
Can you talk about those processes that perhaps aren't going so well and where they're kind of missing in action, where they've had more than 6 months looking for a buyer without a deal happening?
Yeah, of course. So in those cases, we've heard from sources that actually lots of companies continue to do informal chats on the side with potential buyers, even if their formal sale processes are quote unquote on pause. I'll give you an example right now with one that I just talked about with Osea. It was actually reported around this time last year that they were close to being acquired by the Japanese cosmetic company Shiseido, but that the deal fell through. Now, fast forward 1 year, you know, they've got that growth investment from General Atlantic after we had only heard of them doing those fireside chats for, you know, a couple weeks or so. There was also a skincare company called Bioma. They used to be owned by Yellowwood Partners. Also, for example, we heard from a few sources, you know, that one was dead. But last week it was announced that Bonsk had acquired them. So, you know, that's another example of one where, you know, there's chatter in the market. Is this process paused? Is this process dead? And then suddenly out of the blue, we see that they've, you know, got a deal done. And as one of my colleagues, Cristiano Bona, put it, you know, beauty is a very fluid space where surprise deals often happen, and they happen really quickly. I'll just give you a final example right here. There was also Hailey Bieber's skincare brand, Rode. There was an article that they were exploring a sale in early April, and in late May, it was announced that they had been sold to Elf Beauty. So another example of one that just closed super quickly without a formal process per se.
And I guess all the players who are in the market, the strategics particularly, they know who else is out there. They know the kind of companies that they maybe want to buy. So there must be really good market awareness, even though it sounds like there are lots of new entrants to the market. Companies who are looking to sell and also companies looking to buy, they must have a really good idea of the kind of companies that would be aligned with their values and would be a good add-on.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard from a few sources that strategics and sponsors regularly get these sort of beauty sort of maps where they get to see, you know, what kind of companies are interested in being acquired, and they could use those to sort of see if those companies, you know, align with their portfolios and whether they can be more aggressive in pursuing a acquisition.
And just to finish up, could you talk about large beauty companies? The ones that are more difficult to acquire because they're too big, could they consider doing IPOs instead of M&A processes?
Yeah, I think this is definitely, you know, a very viable option for these kind of companies. This is pure speculation, you know, nothing concrete to it, but just to put a name out there, a large company like Rare Beauty, for example, which there was reporting done earlier this year, I think, and last year that they could be up for sale. You know, this is a prime example of one beauty company, large beauty company that I think could be a good IPO candidate if they're looking to, you know, monetize and exit. There's really a very short list of buyers out there for them. You have maybe L'Oreal and Unilever. And if neither one of those come in, you know, I'm sure that they'll have an IPO as one of their alternatives, one of the next logical steps they're thinking about. And this really just goes back to the point that some beauty companies are really just so large that there's only a handful of strategics that and sponsors maybe that are able to fund a deal for them. So an IPO is the next logical move. We did a story a couple months ago, I think, on a beauty contract manufacturer backed by KKR called KDC1. In which we reported that sources said the company could be an attractive IPO candidate for the next couple of years or so. And now, according to Fitch's most recent ratings report on the company, they had more than $2.6 billion in revenue in 2024. And this is just another example of a beauty asset that's just too difficult to sell, you know, at an attractive valuation. So you would think logically the next move for them is an IPO. And I think in terms of general outlook for beauty IPOs, however, the sentiment isn't super great, unfortunately. It's sort of widely expected that beauty IPOs and just even consumer IPOs in general will lag behind other more flourishing sectors such as tech. A few bankers have told me their pipelines have been pushed back. It doesn't seem like there's too many beauty or maybe consumer discretionary companies that could do an IPO this year, but obviously we hope that'll change. It might just take a few good IPOs in adjacent consumer sectors before the beauty floodgates open up.
Brian, good to talk to you. Thanks very much. That was Brian Yu, a consumer reporter for Merger Markets based in New York. And just to point out, we are recording this on Thursday, the 18th of September. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please follow it. And if you're on an app that supports it, please do give us a rating and review. If you'd like to find out more about what we've been talking about on this episode, have a look at our show notes. Join us again next week.